with the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man.
Welcome to the Leisure Podcast on NBC Sports. I'm Paul Papps. He's Andrew Perloff. This is our playoff preview extravaganza. I couldn't find another P.
But would that have been before the wild card games?
This is our conference finals playoff preview extravaganza.
No, I think it's our mid-playoff extravaganza.
That rolls off the tongue.
It's our mid-playoff. Yeah, this is kind of a, like, this week doesn't have a great name. Like, yeah. The week before the Super Bowl, the pre-Super Bowl week, you know that. The week before the championship games is kind of like, I don't know.
Any leftovers for you with the teams that didn't advance? Like, I had a thing we brought up on the Dan Patrick Show. I think if I was a Seattle Seahawks fan, I'd be really, really angry right now because this team, I think it's fair to say, overachieved a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
For the talent on their roster.
They're not even good. Why would you be mad? They should not even been there.
Oh, I think I'm mad this week because, was it Marcus Turner? Who's the kid who dropped the pass late for the Seahawks?
Oh, Malik Turner.
Malik Turner. No offense, Malik. He dropped a real easy one that would have given them a first down and extended the drive, or really got the drive going. Russell Wilson had the ball with, I think, two or three timeouts. He may have three timeouts. I think he had three timeouts and about 4.5 minutes to go. That's way too much time for Russell Wilson, by the way.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the team was, in my mind, put together by, like almost sorcery. Like, it was, yes. Russell Wilson willed them to all these wins. Like, they weren't winning, like, in a normal way.
But they're built for winning not pretty.
Nobody's built to win 10 games by 3 points. You don't want to do that.
You don't. But right now you're in the playoffs, and, you know, the Titans and the Seahawks could have advanced one more week, and the Titans did. And if I'm a Seahawks fan, I'm really salty right now because I think we should have had that game. And even though we would have been a big underdog versus the 49ers, I like Russ more than I like Jimmy, and that would have been enough for me.
Do you really think they would have? Rodgers didn't seem like he was going to get stopped if he got the ball last, though. He would have had another shot.
Totally agree with you. But
he was hot.
I think that hopefully that the Seahawks could have run the clock down and made them burn their timeouts and got it to way down to get a touchdown.
Let me just read these like scores of Seattle this year. 21-20, 28-26, 30-29, 32-28, 40, you know, two overtime wins, 17-9,
37-30. I can't believe they scored 30.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were all in the last fourth quarter. They were all like, they lost their last two games, three of their last four. They beat a really beat up Eagles game in an ugly, this wasn't a peak Seahawks game.
Not
I almost
all.
Feel like they're not giving Russell enough help. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, I mean, they've gotten some good players. The DK Metcalf draft is working out very well for a guy who dropped.
Right, but he should not be a number one at this point of his career. He's a rookie. I mean, at this, you should have, you know, he's not perfect. He's good.
You're right. They overachieve a lot.
Lockett keeps getting hurt. They had injuries. They were good. But do you think they're as good as the Niners?
Oh, no, not with talent. But the Russell factor will always give me pause to pick them over other teams because all he needs is like within 10 points to start the fourth quarter, and I'm still picking them.
One team that I thought people are disrespecting consistently is the Patriots. When you think about it, did you hear my associative property theory that the Patriots barely lost to the Titans? In fact, they probably could have won that game. It was in Foxborough.
The Edelman drop.
Yeah. So they barely lost to the Titans. The Titans destroyed the Ravens. That means the Patriots might have been able to beat the Ravens. The Patriots may not have been that far off this year.
No, because they don't have, you know, great receivers. They've got a bunch of mishmash guys. But, you know, if the Titans defense can figure out a plan to stop Lamar Jackson, you would assume the Patriots would have come up with something similar.
Absolutely. And remember, the Patriots won that last year's Super Bowl over the Rams 13-3. It's not like they've been, a few of their Super Bowls have been like they kind of snuck in there. Yeah. It's always pretty close. This year's team got a lot of grief, but they were 12-4. They were okay.
All right, let's get into the Final Four a little bit. Before we get to the games, I have a home issue I want to go over with you.
Okay.
My daughter, Peyton Pabst, is about to turn 11 years old, and my daughter, Molly, is 8. Earlier this season, my daughter, Molly, who's 8, started watching a lot of football with me and actually asking questions about, who's this? What do they do? Explain this to me. She gets it now, like to the point where she's 8.5 years old, and she's like, Dad, they got to give him more time in the pocket. I'm like, oh my God. She was talking about Watson and the Texans. She goes, they keep letting all the big guys in chasing number four, whatever Watson's number is.
But you got to tell her, like, he's got to throw on rhythm, or what does he expect to happen?
I'm expecting her to tell me that he's got to find his open receivers and check down.
Yeah, he's got to see the hot read on the blitz.
Molly should know better than that. But my daughter, Peyton, and I, again, preface this, I'm from Chicago. I'm a Chicago Bears fan. I'm a fan of all Chicago teams. But I'm open-minded to other teams. I live in New England. I kind of enjoy the Patriots run, and I don't really force
You live right between New York and New England.
Right. I'm in no man's land.
Yes.
I'm in, or in every man's land.
What if you, now, okay, let me ask you a question, though. So you're given an opportunity to open it up to everybody because you don't have a team in your backyard.
My daughter, Peyton's sitting with me, and again, she's 10 and a half, and she's starting to get into football a little bit, and she more likes just hanging out with me. She goes, Dad, which team should I root for? I'm like, you should pick which team we're going to root for. And I was going to be one of those dads who says, ride or die with the Chicago Bears like me, but I don't live in Chicago, and I haven't lived in Chicago since I was 23 years old. I've been living in Connecticut just as long. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be one of those dads who forces a team down my kid's throat. She likes the Cubs. She saw the Cubs win the World Series. She will root for the Bears always because it's her dad. But I was like, pick which team you like. And so she's looking at the teams, and she's going through them, and she's like, oh, I know. She knows who Russell Wilson is because I talked about him, and she sees him play. She knows who Mahomes is because the kids at school like Mahomes. She even says, because the boys talk about him. She knows who Odell is, but the Browns aren't there. She knows who the New York teams are, the Giants and Jets, because there's a lot of Giants fans at her school. Mm. She knows the Patriots. She knows Brady. She knows Edelman, but they're not present. So she was down to the Seahawks, the Packers, and the Chiefs as her team. Who do you think she picked, or who do you think she...
Seahawks?
Packers and Chiefs.
Well, I know you're a Russell Wilson family, as you just mentioned.
Right.
Not the Packers, because that's too much. That's a thumb in the eye for a Bears fan.
It doesn't bother me. I love the Packers vibe and mentality and team and color. I like their colors even.
I mean, the juiciest team by a mile is the Chiefs. Not only they have Patrick Mahomes, a quarterback. Travis Kelce is the best dancer in the league. Got to be the Chiefs. They're just like the greatest show on turf right now.
Yeah, she went with the Chiefs, and her reasoning was she likes the red and gold. She calls it red and yellow because she's big. She's on a yellow kick.
Yeah.
And as you know, your daughters, I'm sure, going different colors.
Yeah, sure. That's a huge deal.
But then she thinks, she goes, Patrick Mahomes, she goes, I like his hair. He seems like he'd be really fun to hang out with. And you and I have met Patrick Mahomes. He is a very nice man.
Yeah. Oh, I could see him being like, he does that really funny commercial with Troy Polamalu where he puts a fan in front of him.
She likes that commercial.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, exactly. That's why I would, Rodgers is more of an adult taste, He's right. like Patrick Mahomes is like the White Claw of NFL quarterbacks, but Rodgers is like a fine glass of scotch.
There you go.
And Russell is like, Russell's an acquired taste. I feel like young people, Russell's just too professional. Like, I feel like young people would gravitate towards Mahomes, not Russell.
My daughter Molly is more of a Russell fan because Russell does those like Kids' Choice Awards. I think he got slimed one year.
Yeah.
You get slimed, the kids are in.
So does she know Gronk for the same reason? He does a lot of that.
They both know Gronk very well.
Yeah. So they were with Chiefs. Can I tell you one issue I have with choosing teams? So I don't like in New York where you have a choice of two teams. I feel like it's wishy-washy. I feel like I grew up in Philadelphia where there was no doubt. You took four teams. You might rebel and root for the Cowboys. But like I find that fans that aren't tied geographically are a little bit weaker fans. Like you grew up in Chicago. Everybody was a Bears fan. I know you had two baseball teams, but take it. There's no doubt. Like that's a fan. That's a strong fan base. I don't like this choosing out-of-town team. I just generally am against it.
I hear you. And again, my daughter grew up in Connecticut, so she's, again, in this mishmash of Jets,
Giants.
Right
between New York and New England.
There's Bills fans. She asked my opinion. She goes, what about the Giants or the Jets? I'm like, I can't, let her pick one of those teams because it's probably going to be a bad run.
Well, how do you know in 8 years, though, the Giants and the Jets won't figure it out? Seriously.
I'm sorry.
Wow. Wow. That is an indictment of two football franchises.
Again, you as a father, you always want that. Accurate. You always want what's best for your kids.
Yeah.
And right now, Patrick Mahomes is what's best for my kids.
Yeah, because you think he'd have a 10-year window.
He's probably going to get a ring.
That's a bandwagon. It's like rooting for picking the Patriots 5 years ago. It doesn't make any. It's a total bandwagon. Or picking the Warriors 6 years ago.
It'd be like picking the Warriors when Steph Curry had his first really good season before they won a title.
Got it. That's a great analogy. Okay, and that would have been a lot of fun for about 5 years.
Are your kids into football?
Well, they love Case Keenum because they've met Case, so they think he's cool.
That's niche. That's really niche.
Yeah, he played seven games. They'll only watch Case. It's bizarre.
Okay.
and the big war in our house is baseball because Grandpa is a Red Sox fan.
Okay.
And they win all the time.
Your father is a Red Sox or her?
No,
your
wife's my wife's father is a Red Sox fan, and my father is a Phillies fan.
Right.
So
that can coexist.
Yet, probably. But so my grandfather does a lot. I don't know if your grandmother's like this, does a lot of little subtle work. She'll be like, he'll be like randomly talking about Mookie Betts at breakfast. I'm right. Like, I know what you're doing.
Yeah. SpongeBob and Mookie Betts.
Yeah. So, but I am still like getting back to, I'm cautious about having them jump onto a winner. I just don't want them to have that front runner mentality. Like, so I can't give them the Red Sox.
I'm with you on this topic because I actually tried to tell her. She goes, how are the Chiefs? I go, they're really good. And I even know when I said it, she's like, kids want something that's easy.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily want something that's hard to root for. It's going to be painful. They're not going to choose painful.
And I know we both have two daughters. We're all about women's soccer. That was great.
Yes.
They like watching women's teams. WNBA, I think they will get into because they enjoy seeing women play more.
It's funny you said that because she considered picking the Packers because Aaron Rodgers dates Danica Patrick.
Yeah.
Danica Patrick was on our show, the race car driver, and they read about her. And she goes, doesn't the quarterback for the Packers date Danica Patrick? Yeah. I'm like, yeah. She goes, ooh. And that was a big chip for A-Rodge.
That's funny. My wife comes out the other day. She goes, so what's the dating situation here? I know Aaron Rodgers is with Danica Patrick. She's interested in Aaron Rodgers because his brother, Jordan Rodgers, was on The Bachelor.
Sure.
So she's always looking for, like, how do I engage in this? And that's so funny about the Danica Patrick. Of course, Russell Wilson and Ciara's one. Who is Patrick Mahomes has a very serious girlfriend. But I don't know if she's famous.
She is now.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, but she's not Ciara or Danica Patrick famous.
After the show,
which couple would you rather hang with? By the way, after
hang with,
go to dinner with,
Tom and Giselle. Because what if they're just normal people?
I feel like Aaron Rodgers and Danica could be so much.
Oh yeah, they're actually going to do shots with you.
Yeah, remember Danica came in the studio. You probably been around it. She seems very fun,
very cool.
Yeah.
Tom
and Giselle would be a trip though.
Tom and Giselle, just so you could say did it.
Absolutely. I didn't even put them in that poll question. I'm just going to give you Russell and Ciara. I feel like that would just be like. You know, they're just very professional. I don't know if there'd be any fireworks in that meal.
No, I think it'd be a nice, pleasant evening.
It'd be a nice, pleasant evening. You play with the kids.
Russell and Ciara would probably ask more about my family than I would ask about football.
Yes, they would.
Paul, how's Peyton doing with her decision? And any chance I can get over to the Seahawks? Go Hawks.
Yeah, no, every sentence would end with still Go Hawks. Pass mashed potatoes, Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. All right, let's get into some other things. On a level of 1 to 10... how bad is the cheating that the Astros did? I'm going to start with the Astros because they're the focal point of this cheating scandal with for those who don't know, I'm sure you do, they put a monitor near the clubhouse, like around the bend, so that had the down the pipe shot, the center field shot of the catcher, so you could see him giving the signs.
Now, which we could see on TV, except it was live. Our TV is a 10-second delay.
Now, how this helps is because usually in the old days, you had to have a player on second base stealing the signs, and you could only really... signal them back to the hitter. If you're at second base and you can give the, pat your leg twice, that means it's a curveball coming, and you could do that for the hitter.
Right, but the catcher knows you're there and is changing the signs.
He does, but at least
they have two sets of signs. They always talk about it, and they're bizarre.
Bypasses that as well.
Yes, because you don't know. If there's not a runner on second, you don't know that your signs are being stolen.
From 1 to 10, how bad is this cheating?
I would say 6, and here's my reason. It's one of the most humiliating things that ever happened to baseball because there's video.
Yeah.
The video that the guy sent out where Jose Altuve comes to the plate, boom, boom. That's the equivalent of being video in a controversy.
And
if you never saw the video and just read it, it'd be a 3.
And for those who don't know, this is a big social media story. Some guy on social media who's not a ESPN or he's not an NBC guy, he's a person who does sports media on his own and does sports media videos and analytics and things on his own.
Doesn't he like cut stuff from the Francesa show or something? He's one of those guys.
Maybe, but he's a lone wolf.
Yeah, just a guy
who put this together his own hard work and basically walked you through the cheating scandal.
It was great. That's why I think it's so embarrassing and it's so lo-fi and it's just like, it reminds me, and tell me if you think this is a good analogy, it reminds me of what the NFL accused the Patriots of. So I don't think they were mad at deflating footballs in general. The idea that the equipment assistant took the bag of balls that had been marked X and measured by the refs on the way to the field, stopped in the bathroom and deflated them after there was an X on them, that's egregious.
Well, you know what, to me?
But I don't know if it happened, but that's egregious.
On 1 to 10, the Patriots cheating if they deflated the footballs for Brady is about a 1 or a half. I don't think that gives Brady any advantage, and both teams could do the footballs the same way. It's a dumb rule.
But what about the method of doing it after the official did the pressure? That's crazy.
It's crazy that they tried it for that benefit, but it doesn't bother me
at
all.
But it's crazy that they even measure they go to the bother of measuring the PSI.
It's a dumb rule.
And they do a big ritual about it, and then the guy stops at the bathroom and deflates him. That doesn't strike you as crazy cheating?
It's crazy, but it's based on a really dumb rule.
And you're crazy if you don't think deflating football makes an impact. She makes a huge impact.
No, I think it does make an impact, but I think the rule is dumb that cheating doesn't bother me.
No, you're right. The rule should go away. Why would you tell a quarterback they can't have the ball a certain way?
Yeah, it's no advantage if everyone does it, prepares it the same way.
Yeah.
I would say I'm about almost at a 9 with the Astros.
Wow.
Because it really is taking away from the true hitter-pitcher matchup where you get up there, you do your research, you do your best, and you're the hitter, and you're trying to figure out what he's going to throw you. He's got a curveball, off-speed, a fastball, cutter, all that type of selection. And your intellect and experience and wherewithal set you apart. Now, if I'm a 230 hitter, like let's say I'm just some Punch and Judy nobody hitter, and all of a sudden I know that the next two pitches are both fastballs, that makes me way better than I actually am.
Yeah.
And it gives you such an advantage over that pitcher that he cannot overcome. He can't know how you're going to swing the bat or if you're going to, imagine if the pitcher got a signal knowing you're going to take on this next one.
Yeah.
This, no matter what I do, he's going to take. He's going to take
strike,
the pitch.
Right.
So I could groove one down and all of a sudden I get a strike. That would be what it's akin to. And imagine if every pitcher started with a strike.
Yeah.
Because he knew that information, the batting average would go down dramatically. I think it's terrible.
You know, there's one, I saw a counter argument. Mariano Rivera only had one pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still unhittable. He didn't even, so not everybody thinks of this fastball, breaking ball variation makes that, but I happen to agree with you.
Yeah.
I heard there were stats that the Astros all jumped up 20% in 1 year or something.
Yeah.
So it reminds me of steroids. I totally agree with you. You know, the interesting thing, the technology obviously is a huge part of this, but I think it's interesting. I'd love to see video of the iPhone. Like, what did they do? Did they send a text to the guy so his wrist buzzed and he knew it was a fastball? The Red Sox got busted for iPhone cheating.
Now, is there iPhone to the hitter in the box or to like the bat, a bench coach, and he did like, it means curveball.
But, so it was like a text saying it's coming fastball. Like, how did they do the mechanics of all that? I haven't seen that many details on how they did that.
Because it's got to be so rapid fire because when you're putting down those signs and when he goes into his kick.
Yeah. What about football, by the way? So if they're decoding football, there are a lot more people working and it's a lot of guys. So aren't you trying to figure out, like, for example, we talked about Yellow Weasel, which was Aaron Rodgers called during the game. Like, isn't Ray Lewis is always trying to figure out what those other calls mean and calling the defense based on the offense? So you think that they record all that legally,
legally,
decode it, and, like, they're coming in on this weekend and say, do the Chiefs say, when Ryan Tannehill says blue 14, what he means is this? Like, how much of that do you think goes on?
It does, but that's all intellect. You're studying your, you know, research.
Yeah, you're recording sounds, which is
during
legal.
The week, not live. If let's say one sideline had a camera on the huddle, and you're reading Aaron Rodgers' lips, and he says, "All right, we're gonna do screen pass." I'm dumbing down the play, but screen pass to Donald Driver right side, and all of a sudden the defensive coordinator goes, "Screen pass to Donald Driver right side," and he said that into the ear of the middle linebacker.
Well, we know, and I'm doing it now. Every coach puts something over their mouth so they can't be mouth read. So it obviously happens.
Yes.
I mean, that's how crazy NFL is, that these stupid guys, I think it's more out of habit, I'll put the playbook over their face because they're afraid of lip reading.
I was a terrible grade school football player, and I played at this little dopey team called the Glenwood Cougars, and I'm going to name check someone here for a second.
Yeah, you got to give the last name too, full Paul Papp style, yeah.
So we were playing some team, and I was terrible, and I was on the defensive line, and this team we were playing, the quarterback in the huddle was like a high-pitched kid, as we all were when we were 11 years old.
Yeah, of course.
And the plays are very basic, like, a 42 dive means the fullback through the two hole. That's how they did it in grade school football. There's not a lot of variety.
Right.
So as he's calling the plays, I could hear him. He'd be like, 38 pitch. That's how dumbed down the plays were. And we had this middle linebacker who was very good named Richie Alcott. You remember Richie Alcott?
Richie Alcott. Oh, sure.
Oh, he was a dominator, like a Sam Huff of the grade schools. And for about four or five plays, I could hear the kid going. He'd be like, 44 dive. I'd turn to Richie. I'd be like, 44 dive, and Richie would line up in the hole, and they don't audible We don't audible in grade school. And he would just annihilate the yeah. halfback. And I can remember Richie's eyes were just rolling in his head going, keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. And then you can only do it for so long because there's noise, but about four or five plays. And that's probably the second greatest athletic accomplishment of my life.
You're telling Richie Alcott. I remember some quarterback was telling us that he, actually, I don't think it was on their bad show. He was telling this story of lining up against Ray Lewis. Mm-hmm. And he said, like, he caught out the play, like.
Oh, it was Peyton Manning and who was a short linebacker? Zach Thomas.
Zach Thomas. Oh, I had heard
Manning
about,
told us about Zach Thomas.
I had heard about it, Ray Lewis, too. One quarterback is like, I called like 14-7 yellow, and then I heard Ray Lewis go, they're running right in this hole. And he was too late to audible. So he's like, what the heck am I going to do now? I guess Ray Lewis was amazing at calling plays.
Aaron Rodgers said to us one time about Urlacher.
Yeah.
He said once in a while he would say something, Urlacher would be like, he'd move the defensive end over.
Yeah.
And Rogers like, oh crap!
I know. You know what the most dejected look in all pro sports is when Aaron Rodgers has to call a timeout at the end of a play clock. He looks like you just like ran over his dog
because he's
usually like, oh, yeah.
Do you know what I do when I'm watching professional football? When they show the running back getting out of the huddle, I look to see where the running back's eyes go.
Yeah,
because I don't think the running back can avoid looking to the hole that he's being assigned to run to.
Yeah,
and so I was watching the other day. It was Dalvin Cook, and he came out of the huddle. He goes. He looked to the right, and like, he's going to right pitch, right? And I'm screaming, pitch to the right. And of course it was. But if I know that, then I wonder if running backs look the opposite way.
I think that's what they always say about offensive linemen. When it's a pass play, they lean back.
Yeah.
And when it's a run play, they lean forward. It can't be that obvious, can it? At that level? Maybe it is to some extent.
We break it down like nobody's business. What else do you have this week?
Oh, man, a lot of football, a lot of Joe Burrow versus Trevor Lawrence talk.
Oh, you want to do that?
Well, it's been done a lot this week. It feels like there's no right answer to me. I don't know what... I mean, Lawrence was terrible on Monday night. There's just no way around it.
Which is an anomaly.
Is a huge anomaly. He's never been that bad. He was under 50%.
He's playing the best defense in college football.
No, their defense was not that great. Remember, they let up 46 to Tua.
I know what you're saying, but they've got some high-end defensive backs.
Yeah, they do, but they're not unstoppable. Even early on, the Clemson was moving the ball okay. It wasn't like they were going against the 85 Bears.
It did feel like his aim was off the entire second half.
I heard one analyst say something really interesting. He said that Joe Burrow was putting so much pressure on Trevor Lawrence because Lawrence has never been in a place where his defense didn't give him the...
He had to answer every drive.
Yeah, he had to answer every drive, and maybe it got in his head. Do you buy that? I thought that was a pretty interesting angle.
I could see the pucker up factor. Every time you get the ball back, you're like, if I don't score here, they're getting another seven.
You're right, because Joe Burrow just caught fire.
And then I think Herbstreit was saying, he goes, I'm not saying he's forcing the ball, but he's trying to throw it, get rid of it so fast, it's sailing on him. He goes, and Herbstreit said something like, when you're a quarterback and you see a guy open and you're trying to hustle to get him the ball, sometimes you don't, I don't know what he said, not downstroke, but like you don't follow through on your thing and the ball sails up.
Yeah. Trevor Lawrence, it's so hard to tell. It looks like he threw that long touchdown pass that they called back on offensive pass interference. I'm like, that looks like an NFL arm. Man, what a gun. Like, and Joe Burrow, for all his awesomeness, he's still like, I saw a stat from our buddy Lance Zierlein. He said that Burrow, when he's throwing outside of the hash marks, has 4 touchdowns and 5 interceptions on the season.
Wow.
Does he throw that 30-yard out?
Joe Burrow?
Yeah, to the sideline. Does he take a 3-step drop and throw the ball on a rope, that long, the one throw that distinguishes quarterbacks? I think he's fine. I think his arm strength's fine.
Yeah.
His athleticism's amazing.
But no one's going to talk about his arm strength in a positive way, though, from when you see him. He's more of a... I think he's a really good scrambler, really good scrambler.
Yeah.
And he seems very comfortable.
He did throw a bunch of long touchdown passes. He threw even on Monday night. So his arm strength's fine. I mean, arm strength is so overrated. I mean, forget it. Like, I heard someone say Tua doesn't have enough arm strength. Like, Tua threw...
Oh, I disagree on that one.
Tua threw... Yeah, I was like, what do you mean? He would hit Jerry Jeudy in stride like 60 yards downfield. Like, it was nothing.
We were watching the national title game, and again, my daughters were picking a team, and Peyton picked LSU, and my daughter Molly, who's 8, picked... picked a Clemson, and the next morning she woke up and she's like, how'd Clemson do? And I told her who the quarterback was and some of the players, and I go, oh, they lost. She goes, how did Taylor Lawson do? I'm like, Trevor Lawrence? She goes, yeah. Taylor Lawson.
Taylor Lawson sounds like a quarterback.
It's really close. I was like, his name's not Taylor Lawson. Trevor Lawrence.
It's a combination of like Taylor Lewan and Shaq Lawson and like 9 other NFL players.
But then she got over it pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah, I'm pretty excited for this drafting, although there was one headline. You and I genuinely, I think, disagree on Tua. I don't think there's any way in a million years Tua is playing football this year. Lee Seimer came out today and said he's throwing in April, which means he's playing football this year. How he was on the ground crying in November or whatever it was. I feel like that hip injury, maybe it was Bo Jackson's in the back of my head.
Right.
Just feels like September is like, that's 10 months later. Not to mention that he has a history of injuries. Like, is he really going to be ready for training camp?
I don't know about the diagnosis of the injury, but they said he'd be ready to go in, you know, maybe May. Some of those people said in before. I think teams are going to be ultra cautious. And if you're
throwing in April and ready to play full contact football in May, if he's throwing for the first time in April, all he's doing is throwing. To actually sit there and get tackled in May?
Let me ask you. All right, I'm going to ask you one last question before we wrap up the league. Let's say this is a draft offer to you. You're the general manager of the Cleveland Browns. Okay. I'm sorry, the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm the general manager of the Miami Dolphins. I offer you all three of my first round picks. I think it's 5, 18, and 26.
Yeah.
To move up to the one pick. Now, you're the Bengals guy.
Yeah.
You are choosing to pass on Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. You're going to drop back to the 4 spot. You're going to, or to the five spot. You're going to have 5, 18, and 26. And I'll guarantee that you have your choice of Justin Herbert, Tua, or any other quarterback.
Right.
I know, like, if you knew it, that you get to pick the second best quarterback or perceived second best quarterback. Would you take that trade and who would you draft? We are so ahead of the draft game right now with this topic, by the way.
No. I take Burrow.
Even though your team needs a lot.
Yeah, but if you don't have the quarterback, none of those picks matter.
But Justin Herbert, at this time last year, if it went into the draft, may have been the number one pick. Tua, 4 months ago, was the number one pick.
Yeah, I don't want Tua because of health. I love Tua normally. I'm not taking Tua.
You're not a Herbert guy.
I'm not really a Herbert guy. I could be wrong about this, but he feels like, you know, like the old stereotype about what NFL wants. Big, strong arm, whereas all the little things go to Burrow. You know, Burrow just seems like he understands exactly what the defense is doing. He's a coach's son. He's pretty spot on. I would say Burrow. Which would you do?
This is tough. Man, this is a tough one. If Tua were completely healthy and I could trade down and get him, I would do it. Because I think it's a coin flip between him and Joe Burrow as far as talent.
Sure. But I mean, Tua has been hurt every year at Alabama. You know.
Too many injuries.
Are you going to get 10 years out of Tua? I don't know. I love Tua. Tua in Miami feels right. Joe Burrow in Cincinnati feels right. Tua in Miami feels like a perfect fit because they have a slower timeline anyway.
Joe Burrow's Mr. Miami. Tua's boring. He should be in Cincinnati.
Joe Burrow is like 100. He's old enough to retire in Miami.
Dude, he cracked a beer in the third quarter on the sideline I saw the other day.
Joe Burrow, I'm telling you, he's retirement age. You forget it. He's 23. We've seen the best of Joe Burrow. He should be throwing for 60 touchdowns.
Joe Burrow would like to fall in the draft to go to Miami. That's how bad he wants to go there.
I think
if you told Joe Burrow you got to go fourth, but you'll go to Miami, and someone else go number one, would you take it? And you're going to lose about $2 million.
Yeah, I do not rule out Burrow saying no to Cincinnati. I do not rule it out for one second.
Remember, this is
they're a terrible team.
You only get this choice once in your life, and you could take this heat. Elway did it, and look how it worked out.
Eli
did it, and it worked out fantastic. You get one bad month. But Burrow, you don't have to play for a franchise that's not competitive.
Burrow's earned enough capital right now that he might have some say. I would do it.
And you do it now, like fast, when you're king of the earth. Like you start leaking out there that...
I don't think he's picked an agent yet. I don't know if he has. I haven't seen it. But it all depends on your agent, too. Like you gotta get somebody in there playing hardball.
Well, you're the agent. You call it the Miami Dolphins and say, if you guys trade up to get Joe Burrow, he's going to be a very friendly signing.
Well... Right, but now with the slots, that's not going to be an advantage.
But I mean, you know, it's
going to... There's no, that can't help.
But you know...
But also, the Panthers have Joe Brady, the LSU, the number 7.
Awesome.
And a billionaire. But you can't pay him. You can't do anything. What are you going to do?
Trade Christian McCaffrey and your pick to the Bengals.
That is saucy. If the Bengals did that, they'd be insane, by the way. But
this is the Leisure Podcast. Hope you liked it. And let your kids pick their own team. That's a public service announcement from Leisure. Take care.